Welcome to the Root of It All podcast with Tree, where you will learn new habits for human betterment. We talk about all things related to personal growth and everything is on the table. Each episode, we'll explore different topics like self-care, mindfulness, goal setting, and more, with a focus on practical tips and actionable advice you can start implementing in your life today. Our goal is to help you become the best version of yourself and live a more meaningful life. So grab a drink, cozy up, take your dog for a walk or go for a drive. Join us for some fun and meaningful conversations with some amazing humans. Let's grow together. All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Root of It All podcast with Tree. And today is a real treat because we have Dakar. And Dakar was actually one of my very first personal trainers at Good Life. He also has tons of things that you're going to hear about today, which is going to be absolutely amazing because he's also a fascial stretch therapist, obviously personal trainer. He is also a sports coordinator, which we're going to learn more about. He's a retired soccer player and he is looking to explore new ways how to entertain his whole battle rapping thing, which is very cool. Also, what I'm going to add, which he didn't tell me to add, that he is a philosopher of types, which I think is really cool because the way that you think things. So welcome. Thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you for having me. I'm just happy to be here and excited to get started.
Well, and the thing about the time is that also Dakar is a girl dad. So
yes,
three. And what are their ages again right now?
7 or 8 now, actually, is my oldest, and then 3 and 2.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And that is, so that's one of the themes that we want to talk about today when it comes to male-female energy. Because, Dakar, you have a very beautiful way of how to connect with people in general, right? And the big thing that I found about you, that when you are connecting with people, is that you land within this curiosity. So not just curiosity in your mind, but curiosity from like a feeling sense as well. So even when it comes to people, say if they're in their ego or they're in judgment or they're struggling in some way, that you have this like peacefulness about you, that you stay nice and grounded, and you're doing something, like you're still taking care of what needs to be taken care of. So teach us about that sort of process that you have around that. Like, and maybe you don't even realize what process you have. Like, maybe I'm putting you on the spot about that as he's like in thinking mode right now.
Yeah, I don't think I necessarily have a process, but what I do try my best to do is see everything with an open mind. Mm-hmm. Typically, not always, but typically approaching things with like a calm mind or a calm demeanor can help put people at ease. Especially in my industry, I'm normally seeing people that are either high stressed or exhausted, maybe adrenaline fatigue or whatever that might look like. So if I can approach that situation with calmness first, and then if I need to be a little bit more excited and happy, I can do that. If I need to maybe slow things down for that person, respective to what they did that day, then I can do that as well. So I try and just do that the best that I can.
And you do it beautifully. It's almost as if you're, and so I'm going to teach you, well, everybody, just different patterns that I see within that. So first of all, the curiosity piece is one. Two, I believe that you're stepping into their model of the world. So you're not staying within your own belief system per se, right? Or your belief system is very flexible, right? So you're genuinely truly care about all individuals and hey, cool, what's their outcome? So you're curious about that and you're looking at them in that way. So if they are in stress or overwhelm or fatigue, like what you said, that you're seeing them where they're at and then staying at their pace, but still moving forward with them. So that
absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that's a big thing too, when it comes to being a girl dad, it's like you're the way that you, a lot of, and I've seen a lot of girl dads and they are just in like protect mode, must protect, and it can come out kind of a little bit aggressive, which sometimes, and you and I had this discussion prior too, but sometimes when girl dads are in that zone, that the daughters can then become in fear because they might be afraid to say things to their dad, because then all of a sudden it gets in like higher protection mode. Whereas for you, this tool that you have of stepping into their model of the world allows them to feel extremely safe and secure of just saying anything. And I felt that with you when you were my trainer and I was going through some hormonal stuff. And here we are training, and I'm like, oh man, I know I'm going through some hormonal stuff. And I just told you about it, and you're like, okay, yeah. So teach me what's going on. And I'm like, cool, okay, let's get into this conversation. So where, like, what do you think, or what do you feel that brought you to be like this?
I think good things and bad things, right? In my family growing up, I was a lot of the times the mediator between the two. So I'd had to do a lot of listening to whether it be my parents or my siblings about maybe their problems or concerns or things of that nature. And then trying to direct them elsewhere or whatever that might look like for that respective discussion. And then also in sport, right? Where on a team with 22 other players, the coaching staff, the physio staff, the athletic therapy staff, the nutritionist, all the whole nine, you essentially have a job, right, to be able to be a cog within that. But every single day, you might not have the same responsibilities as you did the other day, right? I might need to be a little bit more dominant. I might need to be a bit more quiet. I might need to be the joker. I might need to be XYZ. So, my best friend calls me a chameleon. Because I have that ability to kind of see kind of what's going on and then insert myself where I feel is most necessary. And then adopting that into training was relatively easy because I felt like I did it for so long that I had a certain set of skills that allowed me to be like, oh, okay, well, Tree's feeling this way today. Well, let's do this. Or Bob is feeling this way today. Let's do that. Or whoever else I might be in front of. So, yeah.
And that's an awesome piece for people to learn, because a lot of people can relate to that pattern, that strategy that you were somewhat forced into, and that it felt better when you took the position of peacemaker. Because, and even the more that you did that, you had proof that you knew how to do it, that you could do it, and that when you were that chameleon, that it actually worked out better for all parties involved. So, in us as human beings, it's not even a conscious decision. You didn't wake up and be like, I wonder what fires I'm gonna have to put out today, right? Because
No.
no, says nobody ever. Maybe a firefighter,
Yeah,
right? But
literally.
yeah, but it's, and we all have our own strategies. So I also was that person in my family, because my mom and my sister never really got along. So I was always the one that was in the middle, just making peace in some aspect. Even with all sorts of other like friends all the time, I was always that person on the outside, just keeping the peace. Yeah, and there's a groundingness to it, a humbleness to it. It's when you're really take this position. But do you find that after everything is totally okay, what is it that you do with those emotions?
That's a great question because at a younger age, I had no idea what to do with them. Fortunately, I was playing a lot of piano at that time. And so I could put all those different emotions into the piano. And then through on the soccer field, I could feel like I could get some of those emotions out as well. But as I got older and I wasn't playing piano as much, it became difficult. Because I felt like I was taking on maybe too much responsibility or too much of people's emotions and energies and things of that nature. And so unfortunately, I kind of closed the door on a few people because it just became a little bit too much. And then you're trying to develop different strategies to try and avoid them and things of that nature. But at the same time, my outlet was still music and soccer. Those are my two outlets, right?
Awesome. And it's interesting too that you say about that you had to let go of some people from your life, and It's probably actually you did them a favor as well, because what happens is that people that are always kind of not on purpose creating some form of chaos and seeking out help, that unknowingly and not on purpose, that's their way of getting attention. So yeah, a lot of people, they'll like I have a friend of mine that her life is a lot of chaos. But when there's no chaos, she actually creates it, not on purpose, because it's almost like her nervous system feels like things are not good unless there's chaos around, because she's never experienced life without chaos.
Yes, I
And
know a few
she's,
people like that.
yeah. And so it sometimes is a favor to back away. And what happens too is that these people, they'll find somebody else to be that mediator. They'll find somebody else to actually take the role of what it is that you're doing. And we never keep the same people in our lives forever. And I forget how the saying goes, like some people are for a season or a reason or whatever that saying goes, but it's absolutely true. And we are responsible for ourselves, our own individual self. So a lot of times when people get an anger or resentment because of other people's behavior, that it really is their own emotion to go through, as opposed to blaming somebody else because they're pissed off or whatever.
Yes.
And so another cool thing that you're mentioning is just your outlets. So anybody that's listening to this, be curious of what patterns you're in. Like what, maybe you're in just a piece of this pattern, whether you're a pleaser, whether you're doing too much for other people. What patterns are you in, and then what outlets? So you said piano, you said movement and music. So I am actually genuinely curious. How did you get into battle rapping? Like, did you see it and then go do it? Or did you just like, oh, this is cool, I'm just gonna freaking do this? Or like, I have no idea how to even, like, where would you go? Where do you find out? Like, yeah, tell me. Like, this is an interesting, very interesting thing.
Well, when I was growing up, my dad, in fact, before I was growing up, my dad was part of a band, right? And he was a musician. He was a bass player and a singer. So growing up, I got to see him kind of play the music at home, but then he also had a studio that he used to run on Eglinton Street as well. And then you would have like a series of artists come through into the studio, in and out. At that same time, my two older brothers were part of a rap group, right?
Oh.
So they used to rap as well. And they're both 10 or 9 and 10 years older than me, right? So they used to rap as well. So for me, growing up around music was kind of just, oh yeah, this is the norm. Like, doesn't everyone do
Right.
this? So me starting to rap was. Felt very, very natural because it was just, well, I have these thoughts, these emotions. Let me just put it to pen and paper. My brother does it. My dad did it. Why don't I? Right. And at that point in time, I was listening to a lot of rap music, a lot of soul music, a lot of R&B, a lot of jazz, a lot of classical because I was still playing the piano and stuff. And I felt as if some of these songs couldn't, what's the word I could give? They couldn't express how I was truly feeling. I felt like some things were being left out. So then I grabbed the pen, grabbed the paper, and started writing from there. And then that transitioned to writing songs and writing my own raps and things of that nature, a little bit of poetry. And then the battle rap kind of transitioned where I found it online. I'm like, oh, this is so cool, right? You see a couple of videos on YouTube, and then you kind of just go down the rabbit hole and looking to see what you can find and stuff like that. So I ended up seeing a lot of battles from a league called URL, Ultimate Rap League, which is in a pretty much based out in the States. And then you see a couple of battles from King of the Dot, which is based out in Canada, and then the West Coast of the States as well. But through watching those two things, you learn about battle rap and how to structure your raps because it's very different from like making a song, right? And as I start kind of diving into that. One of my good soccer friends, he was also into battle rap as well. And we actually had a battle, it's actually really funny. We actually had a rap battle in high school. I was grade 11 at the time in the staircase. So prior to my knowledge, I thought it was just me, a few of my boys, him, a few of his boys. There was like 50 people there in the staircase, downstairs, upstairs, kind of just watching, and we're just rapping back and forth. So that was like my first rap battle. And then the VP got wind of it, came by, but we didn't know he was watching, but he was watching as well. After the battle, he's like, "Do you guys want to do this in the auditorium?" We're like, "Okay, yeah, sure." So 2 months, why not? So 2 months later, it's me, the same guy, we're battling again in the auditorium of the school, and there's like, I don't know, 100 to 200 people kind of just waiting, watching. So that was my first dive into it. And then you talk to a few people and you realize, oh, there's battle rap leagues in Ottawa and Toronto and Barrie and things like that. You kind of just go to different places and find a home, make it your own.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That great for the VP to do that, right?
Right?
To see what all of the students are is interested in, and instead of like that is such how a principal should be, that
Yes.
they're doing exactly what you do. They're like, oh, this is what they're into. This is what they're watching. So he's actually embracing it and allowing it to actually happen on a bigger scale, which is awesome.
Yeah, it was I'm very thankful for that, because that was the first, that was the what you're doing is okay and people like it, right? That was the first time I felt that, and I felt more confident after that, like bringing my raps out in public and things of that nature.
And that's a big thing when it comes to human change, is nothing changes in the mind. Those are just thoughts. Nothing changes in the mind, right? We can come up with thoughts. It's actually actions and proof. So you had proof because everybody was watching you. And then you doubled down on the proof because the principal said, or the vice principal said, hey, do you want to do this in the auditorium? And then you tripled down on the proof because you actually presented in the auditorium with hundreds of people. And then also four times the proof of actually going out and doing the battle raps and stuff like that. So, yeah, so people that are listening, how much proof do you need? And making sure that it's under five. If you're still questioning things and you've had proof five times, then there's also something else going on. So you want to you're in the head as opposed of trusting the truth that's happening around you. Yeah, I love the look on your face.
No, I like that, because I've never thought like that the concept about truth and proof,
Yeah.
like that makes perfect sense. And it's kind of just like, there you I told you an example, and I see it as, oh, one scenario of proof, but you're like, nope, actually it's layered, and it's this and it's this and it's this and it's this. And appreciating those like minuscule processes as instead of just throwing it as one big one, it's definitely pretty powerful.
Well, and I have one specific question, but I just realized that I have another one before I get to this one. And so it's interesting because you mentioned you have two brothers, yes?
Yes.
And then your dad, and you're all so you two brothers, dad, so four males in the household.
Well, technically five, because I have a younger brother as well.
Okay, so five males, okay, and mom, yes.
Yes, mom.
Okay, so it's interesting that you're a girl dad coming from a very male dominant home.
Yes.
So let me ask you this, who were all of you boys more afraid of, your mom or your dad? Like if you knew that you
Oh,
were gonna get
my mom. It's not even close.
right.
Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. We're more afraid of my mom on a day-to-day basis. But if you got our dad upset, it was over. He was a very calm man. And he didn't really get bothered by much. But if he got upset, you knew it was over. But mom was the one to be afraid of.
Cool. And so at a very young age, you learned how to respect your parents in different ways.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing because in society right now, we talk about, in a lot of talks that I do, I talk about minding authority. And when kids are kids, it's about minding the authority of their parents, which it sounds like your parents did an amazing job in that way, in loving, caring, but like laying the law when it needed to be. But also, too, you guys all had this beautiful outlet of music. That's a big thing too. Music is a huge thing. Physical movement is a huge thing. So a lot of families, if they're heavily into physical activities, it stimulates all of our senses because us as a species, we're meant to actually move every single day.
Yes, agreed.
Before, when there was no vehicles, there was no nothing at all, that we literally had to walk everywhere,
We have
everywhere.
no choice.
Yeah, we'd do miles and miles a day, and then we'd have to figure out our shelter and all of these things. So even when it comes to music, you look at any culture, music is part of it.
Yes.
Like even Hawaiian, they have lots of chants. The indigenous cultures, there's like feet pounding and different things like that. Different like Christianity, there's singing. In Hinduism, or other, there's like ohms, or like different types of vocal sounds that happens.
Yes.
So in every single culture, there's some form of sound, whether you're stomping feet or movement, even dance, look at cultural dancing as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's so simple too, because like as much like music is vibrations, and vibrations are felt from your body all the way down to your soul. And they're so powerful because with or without words, a message can be sent, and that's why it's so like there's so many lively stories that are passed down through song, praises that are passed down through song, rituals that are passed down through song, and things of that nature. And it's a beautiful thing because, like I said, it's vibrations and it holds so much weight with it, right? And now sound has changed a little bit, but it's the same thing. You go to a concert and you feel the bass guitar, or you feel the drums, or you go somewhere, you feel the drums, or you're at a stadium and you hear the drums, or whatever it might look like. Like there's little things that are just transmuted beautifully into the world.
And it is such an amazing thing. I remember my husband and I, we had our first year wedding anniversary, and we planned this like beautiful romantic night or weekend or whatever it was at Niagara on the Lake, and we were just like, oh yeah, this is nice. And the following Friday, for whatever reason, he ended up getting tickets to a Leafs game. And so we went to the Leafs game, and so we got married in November. So this Leafs game, they have a Leafs game around Remembrance Day. And so there's the whole stadium, and they have the bagpipes. They have so here we are at this Leafs game, and the Leafs game was way better than Niagara on the Lake. We had so much fun because of the energy of this stadium. And the sound, the music, when they sing the national anthem, the bagpipes, everything. It was just the energy. Like you said, the vibration goes down to the depths of your soul. Like
It
it's,
does,
yeah, and it's such a vibrational thing. And so when you came from a home filled with more male energy, and now here you are, a girl dad. And so, two-part question. First, one, when you knew that you were going to become a dad, what was your perception versus reality? So, we talk about what we believe and then the truth. And then two, how did you step into and just be total, transform yourself into being completely immersed in this female energy coming from a predominantly male energy growing up?
To answer the first part, perception versus reality, it's a scary thing. Well, it doesn't have to be, but it was for me at least, because I didn't want to step into a role that I wasn't feeling like I was prepared for, right? So I was talking to dads galore. This dad over there, this dad in that gym, this dad at that school, this friend's dad, that friend's dad, and kind of just like trying to get all the different, like, hey, what was your experience? What was your experience? Can you have any information? Anything I should learn? I was just picking as much information as I could, just so I felt ready for when things came my way, you know, and I had an idea of how to deal with them. And I still do that to this day. Like I just had a talk with a man I respect. His name is Ryan Donnelly. But we were talking about because he has two boys and one daughter, and his eldest son plays football. And we were talking about, because me coming from a professional soccer background, Bella also plays soccer. I'd love for my kids to play soccer, but I don't want to force them into it because I know how cuckoo I could potentially get, right? So in a perfect world, I want to know how to navigate through that properly, right? Because there are a lot of times where I feel like my dad didn't navigate through it properly. And I didn't want to go to him about those respective things, right? And that strained the relationship at times. And so I wanted to make sure that, hey, what was the problem? What could I have done differently? And how should I go about doing it? And so essentially, I ended up, this conversation was the best advice he gave me actually was don't have the sport talks on the drive home. And it's like, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But in hindsight, I'm not thinking about that because I've taken Bella to soccer multiple times before, and right when she gets in the car, it's like, oh, Bella, you know, you did this well, but maybe you could have done this a little bit better. And it comes from a good place, but internalizing that drive home when I was a kid never went well. I don't want to hear that, right? Tell me the day tomorrow or something like that. So listening to little things like that that I've been trying to do all my life, just typically like experience can tell me a lot, history tells a lot. And I feel like if I just put myself in a position to be successful, I'll at least be that much more ready and that much more equipped. Then to talk about now, coming from a male-dominated home, and now having to deal with three girls, it was, I'll tell you, I don't, I haven't told anyone this actually, but after I had my second kid, I felt fine. I didn't feel overwhelmed. In fact, I felt like, oh, I could do three, four, five more of these. Like, this is really not that crazy. After the third, I was like, oh, this is completely different. And the main part was like, you know, me and my partner were two, and then we had two kids. So we never felt outnumbered. But now that there's three on the other side and two of us, it's like, oh, I'll have two sometimes, I'll have three. It's completely different. I only have two hands. I'm not an octopus. Like these are the thoughts that are going through my head at that time. But I say all of that to say it was very, very different. Very, very different. A lot of times, especially as in my young adolescence, growing up in with my other brothers and things of that nature, I want to assert myself naturally, right? And you're trying to find ways to do it, and it becomes difficult when you are, I don't know, the fourth in line, right? And in terms of the pecking order, you know, there's my father, obviously there's my mother, but in terms of male dominance, there's my other two brothers that are, you know, a decade older than me. And it's like, well, they are the dominant male figures in the household. And so learning how to navigate through that while also not feeling like I'm lesser than, I think put me in a great position to now be like, oh, okay, it's different, but I've done a form of this already in terms of navigating through something like this. And then you couple that with my asking for every little bits of experience from other dads. I feel like that's allowed my transition to be a lot smoother than it possibly could have. And I feel good about it. I like it. So, yeah.
Well, and I've told you this before because it's very interesting as I've met so many people. Like I work, sometimes I'll have like 20 clients in a day. And so the cool, unique thing about you and what I'd love to see other people model is this whole concept of stepping into their model of the world just for a moment, not staying there, but being in so much curiosity. Also too, you have a lot of self-acceptance. Like you very much are settled within yourself from a vibrational standpoint, even if your vibration goes a little bit sideways for whatever reason, whether it's a hard situation in life or just whatever it is, that you have some really good mechanisms to shift and change that for yourself, to shift into a better mood. And so when it comes to kids, that when parents choose the mood first, and then deal with whatever the situation is from that mood, it's a better place to be. Whereas a lot of parents that I see is that they see the child and the mood that the child's in, and then they go into the mood of the child, and then they try to stop it by instead of moving through it together. Because every mood, even as adults, we move through it. We just can't stop something, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was at this networking event, and this person that I was talking to, she was getting a little bit emotional, and just from like a very good point of view. And this other woman came and be like, "Oh, you're gonna be fine. You're amazing. You're awesome. Oh, you're awesome. You're super awesome." And it was like, it was just so like, this weird, every like, there was myself, there was the person, and then there was the other person that would just flew in, like, you know, jazz hands, right? And all she was like pom poms, and it would have been, you know, like a so it's like, from a human behavior point of view, I'm standing there and I'm like, wow, this is like, I should be filming this, because it'd be such a great learning experience for somebody to observe.
Yeah.
What happens in people's nervous systems when all kinds of people are in different moods?
Oh, absolutely. I'm like, the girls, like 2, 3, 8, like they are in moods, like the wife as well. Like they're all in moods. I'm in moods sometimes as well. And like, I wasn't aware that I was doing that step process that you mentioned, but I do, you know? And I think it's important that, like, hey, like, okay, you're sad. I don't need to meet you with sadness. Like, if you want to talk about it, we can talk about it. If not, like, we can just cuddle, like, we can figure it out, like, whatever you want to do. And I try to be that open. I really do, because they benefit from it. And then it makes it easy for them to be able to navigate through those emotions and whatever they might be feeling at that time.
Which is so important, because so many people, they try to either stuff down their emotions, or they feel like they end up in shame or guilt because of whatever the emotions that they're having are. But hey, we're in an emotion every moment of every single day, and that's a good thing, right? That would suck if we just like, if we were surprised all the time, just like one emotion, right?
That would not be good at all.
Yeah. The one thing too, I remember when you were my trainer and we were working out together. I don't know if you see me, but I keep on looking over here because I have this like bug and he keeps on moving around. It's like a very interesting bug. So if anyone's watching this on YouTube, I just keep on looking over to a certain spot, but it's like right here. It's like getting closer to me. It's a funky looking bug. Anyways, I'm not afraid of spiders or mice, or I don't know. It's funky. All right. So, but the thing that I really loved about you being my trainer is that we had a lot of fun. Like there's a lot of sarcasm, joking around. It was so light, and no matter what, where my energy was at too, just being self-employed, having multiple businesses, and you know, I have to go to the gym, I have to move my body, I have to physically, that's my outlet too.
Good for
right
you. Yeah.
And so that's the great thing that I really loved about training with you, and also I'm so happy that you're still staying in the industry with people, and that you're not behind a desk anywhere. Like sports coordinator. Like that is so cool. Like I know that every human that you touch, like anyone that's listening to this and gets an opportunity to work with the car, like it is awesome. Like it just, it's use him as a role model, really stepping in and seeing how it is that he operates. It's an awesome thing.
Thank you. Honestly, thank you.
Yeah. So thank you for, you know, giving us a little bit of your time, and how I know how busy you are with job, 3 kids, beautiful partner. And
yes.
So if you were to tell like people listening to this, what would you leave them with?
Ask questions, be curious. I feel like having people's experiences can only strengthen your own. I feel like perspective and understanding where people are, whether they're your kids, your parents, your coworkers, whatever that might look like, just understanding where they are is also very important for understanding how you got to navigate with those people, maybe on that day or just in general. So just be curious.
Yes. Curiosity. If we lose curiosity, then we're just assuming. And when we get in assumptions, that's when we get into imposter syndrome or self-doubt and all of those things. So, yes, I love it. Yes. So be curious. Awesome.
Absolutely.
And if anybody wants to get, I guess, get in touch with you, I don't know. Like, are you like, oh, fascial stretch therapy or anything like that? We'll have all of your links of if anyone wants to get in touch with you for those things. Yes?
Perfect. Sounds great. I'll send
Yeah.
them
Awesome.
there.
Well, folks, that's a wrap for today's episode of The Root of It All with Tree. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. But before we go, I just wanted to remind you that you can follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram, and we will be posting motivational quotes and behind-the-scenes content that you won't want to miss. You can always sign up to come live while we're filming this, or even join us online through Zoom. We always offer open question and answer after each episode that we don't record, so it's all private, but you can get more involved. So sign up for free at businessgrowthresults.com, and we're going to cover all kinds of different topics that you're not going to want to miss. And if you're looking for that one-on-one guidance or help, be sure to book a free screening. You can do that at burlingtonhypnosis.ca or call 905-634-4777. And finally, you can catch our podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. So be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode. Thanks for listening.